Hi, this is Chuck Anderson. We're at the Huron Arena today, and welcome to the show. This is our birthday show. It starts our third year being associated with radio station KOKK, with studios in Huron, South Dakota. I want to take a moment to thank some of the people who have been so helpful getting the show on the air for the last 2 years. First, there was Linda Marcus, who gave this show its birth in February of 1992. She listened to this radio news reporter and journalist explain a format for a new radio show I had in mind. Without hesitating, she said, let's do it. I want to thank Tim Ahmed and Jeff Duffy, who patiently explained the technical questions I had about the engineering of the production studios. Other staff helped me, including Judy, the traffic manager, and Carol, who does the radio logging of our show. Two super women, I might add, who have logged these shows for us now over 2 years. And of course, there are the various disc jockeys over the years now who get the show on the air. I want to say thanks to Peggy, Amy, Brad, Brian, Mike, Roxy, Kent, Mary, Sarah, and others I'm sure I'm forgetting by name, but not by memory. I want to thank all of the guests who have appeared on this show. I remember the day Governor Bill Clinton was sworn into office. I was curious as to what the people of Huron would like to see our new president do his first few months in office. So, who are the most honest people in the whole world, and they'll say it the way it is? The young people, that's right. So within 20 minutes after President Clinton took office, I was at the lunchroom of the Huron Middle School asking them their thoughts. We had teachers, high school teachers, and people at random from the Huron Mall and senior citizens at the Sunquest. All in all, 160 people were interviewed in 48 minutes, and I must say, a new record for this reporter. We've had literally hundreds of guests in the last 2 years, and I want to say thank you to each of them for their time and their comments. We've had everyone from astronauts and professional baseball players to authors to cowboys. They were all interesting and gave our radio talk show the variety that we sought. Most of all, I want to thank our listeners from South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, and Nebraska for listening and supporting the show. Also, thanks for the letters and phone calls, because I'll tell you, they were really appreciated. From our first show that had as guests Dave Sternberg, Roger Chase, and Brian Majerus, aired March 29th, 1992, we produced shows in the studios, a lot of them. But today, we're live, broadcasting from the Huron Arena, and delighted to have as a guest on our birthday show another South Dakotan, a songwriter, recording artist, stage personality, Kyle Evans. And welcome to our birthday show, Kyle.
Thank you, Chuck. I'm glad to be here.
Kyle, I know you're from Wessington Springs, and you still live there yet, right?
Yes, I do. I've spent about 45 out of 46 and a half years there.
We'd love to have you go back in your life and tell our listeners some of the highlights of your career as you can think back on your show business life.
Well, there have been a lot of them. You know, early on, I started out as a single. Just playing the first time was a highlight. I strummed a borrowed guitar on a little amplifier in a little establishment and got paid $20 for singing 4 hours, and I thought, wow, what a way to make a living. And that night had to be a highlight. Once we got the band formed, which I guess happened in February of 1969, we played for 6 or 8 months, and then we played the Plains in Huron. I don't even remember the year. I guess it probably was the middle of 69. Al Barnes got a hold of us and had us come up. And because of the novelty idea, I guess, of us having a band or playing the country, Sherwin Linton, I believe, was also there. He was in the ballroom that night, and we were in the lounge, and I think it was the largest crowd in the 14-year history of the Plains. Wow. And boy, we felt like superstars. As time went on, There have been so many wonderful things that have happened to us as a band. I guess to top it off, probably being inducted into South Dakota's Hall of Fame is probably the biggest honor that I could ever have hoped to receive. In 1989, I won the 1988 Western Heritage Award for Music given by the Cowboy Hall of Fame. They call it the Wrangler Awards. I thought it was a jeans promotion, and when they asked me to come down to receive the awards, I kind of told them that.
Where was that held?
That was in Oklahoma City at the Cowboy Hall of Fame. I had booked the National Circuit Finals Rodeo in Pocatello, Idaho, and I didn't know if I could get away, and I sure didn't want to go all the way to Oklahoma City for to pick up a pair of jeans, a Wrangler Award, they called it. And I ended up getting a hold of the fella who entered. Well, actually, the South Dakota Centennial album is the album that won the award. The fella that sent it in was from Wyoming. I got a hold of him, and I said, "What is this?" I said, "I can't go down there just to pick up a pair of jeans, although I wear Wranglers." I said, "I've got 12 pair of them at home." And he said, "Well, I don't know." He said, "The Wrangler is a Charlie Russell bronze statue." And I said, "Well, what is this deal?" And he said, "Well, I don't know, but some of the past winners are Robert Redford, Clint Eastwood, John Wayne, Jimmy Stewart, Willie Nelson, and Louis L'Amour." And
oh, what company.
What company. I called the lady back at the Hall of Fame, and I said, "I changed my schedule around. I'm going to be able to make it."
You know, you remind me of what Baxter Black said a few weeks ago at my show, where he was asked to be on The Tonight Show. And he misunderstood and thought it was The Tonight Show in Denver and turned him down. He says, "I don't know if I have the time." Took him 3 years to ever get back on the Johnny Carson show.
Oh, boy. But he made her, and rightly so. What a talent. What a fantastic.
You've worked with Baxter Black, I understand.
Yeah, we have. We've done both as a single and with the band. We went out to Edgemont here a couple of years ago. He came in to do a show, and we did an hour, and then Baxter did an hour. And he is the way he is, whether he's on stage or in the middle of the afternoon in the back of a Western store. He's full of fire. He's got a great vocabulary and a fantastic mind. Anyway, back to the
that's right.
Back to the awards. I did fly to Oklahoma City. And,
to get those jeans.
Yeah, to receive the Wrangler Award, which is a Charlie Russell bronze statue, and that was one of the highlights of my life.
That is really incredible, to be in the company of Robert Redford and Clint Eastwood. Man, was it kind of a humbling experience?
It was. You know, we sat at the awards banquet. There were 600 people there in black tuxedos and black formals, and I think my father and I are the only two that had sports coats on, and it bothered me a little bit. Michael Martin Murphy was the host that night, and there were other dignitaries doing the presenting. And my father, I got to looking at my father and thinking about the way he was. He wasn't going to change his way for anybody, and I decided, why should we have to change? We're going to be ourselves, and we're going to go up. I was one of the few that went up without notes for an acceptance speech, and when I got done giving it, Michael Martin Murphy said, "You know, cowboys have always tended to be long-winded." I guess maybe I overdid it a little, but it was truly it was a humbling experience. I still I don't really feel I deserved the award, although I am proud of the Centennial album. I wrote six of the songs on the album, and it has been a good album for us. And I wrote them from the heart.
Is that the one I'm holding right here?
No, the Centennial album came out in 1989 for the Centennial.
Is this like your newest cassette right now?
Yeah, the one you're holding is a Songsmith cassette, and that is the newest cassette.
Two of these, I understand, that you wrote. Maybe, you know, there's maybe some people out there in four states, Kyle. I hate to say this. Maybe there's someone that's never heard what you do. And we want to give that opportunity right now. We're going to pick one of these to put on our disc so we can play it for the people. But I'd like to have you introduce the legend known as Casey. Tell us about the inspiration of it, and I don't care how long-winded you are. You're a very interesting man. What inspired you to write this song?
When I was 6 years old, I watched Casey Tibbs ride in Pierre, South Dakota. I never saw Casey again, I guess, up close until 1984 at the National High School Finals in Rapid City. Casey came walking across the arena. He still had his hat shaped like he always did. And someone said, "There comes Casey Tibbs," and my heart went right to my throat. I had just sung the anthem at the rodeo. That didn't give me the goosebumps like seeing Casey Tibbs did. Casey, at the time of his death about 4 years ago, was truly America's favorite cowboy. He's one of those cowboys that will never be equaled. And I decided back in 1984 that someday I was going to write a song about the legendary Casey Tibbs. And this is called The Legend Known as Casey.
From a horse ranch in Dakota, the man called Casey Tibbs was destined to ride his way to fame. Flashy and extravagant in everything he did, at an early age the whole world knew his name. He was born with class and spirit and a ton of honest try, a cowboy in the true sense of the word. And when it came to riding broncs, his limit was the sky, and he proved it on every hit he spurred. 9 times he won the gold in his 20-year career. They say no one could ride the way he did. Colorful and reckless, Casey rode without fear, and those who knew him say that's how he lived. Although he won the barebacks once and twice the all-around, saddle bronc is where he gained his fame. Very few horses born could put him on the ground, and 6 times the buckle bore his name. Sickness took its toll, and he knew he only had a little while. Casey kept on charging like he was on a roll, and he rode one more bad one out in style. Covering the bad ones and making it look easy, this cowboy rode them high, wild and free. And the world won't forget the legend known as Casey, his name's forever carved in history. He was born with class and spirit and a ton of honest try, a cowboy in the true sense of the word. And when it came to riding broncs, his limit was the sky, and he proved it on every hit he spurred. And the memories live on of the legend known as Casey, his name forever carved in history.
That was Kyle Evans and his band with a song he wrote titled Legend Known as Casey. Kyle Evans is personally with us on our show today, so please stay with us for the rest of the hour. It's going to be a lot of fun. This is our anniversary show celebrating the start of our 3rd year for your radio enjoyment. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. 3, 2, 1. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson, and guest on my birthday show starting our 3rd year with all of you wonderful people out there. And by the way, we want to say thanks for letting you, for us being part of your morning's entertainment. The guest is Kyle Evans, who just sang the last song, which was Legend Known as Casey. And, you know, I was kind of joking with you, but maybe we should say there may be somebody out there that's never heard of Casey Tibbs. So enlighten our people about Casey Tibbs from Fort Pierce, South Dakota, Kyle.
Well, Casey probably is known today as the greatest saddle bronc rider that ever lived. He was a 9-time world's champion. He won the bareback event once, he won the all-around twice, and he won 6 world titles in the saddle bronc riding. And as the song kind of said just a moment ago, Casey was extravagant. He was a wild man. He was fun to watch and fun to be around. He was a prankster, and And I'm sure if any of his family is listening, they have to agree. I've heard stories from older cowboys for years about Casey Tibbs, and I don't think I forgot a piece of one of them.
Are there any you can share with us? Are there a few that are funny or sad or strange?
Well, it's like at the Madison Square Gardens rodeo, and the steer wrestlers had some big, tough steers. They were having a terrible time getting them down. And one fella jumped on a steer, and the arena was pretty wet yet. They'd wet it down good, and Casey wasn't even riding that night. He was sitting with his white shirt and his purple scarf, sitting on the chutes watching the rodeo. This steer floundered around with this cowboy and finally got loose. The cowboy never got him thrown, this big old steer wrestler. Steer come trotting by the chutes on the way out, and Casey jumped on him. Well, Casey wasn't that big a man, but he spent 10 minutes probably wrestling with this steer in his white shirt and his slacks and his fancy purple boots and scarf, and he ended up just as muddy as the steer was, but he got him thrown, and the whole place stood up, and Casey got a standing ovation in Madison Square Gardens just for pulling one of those things that only Casey would do, you know. So he was not only a great talent, but I think that probably from the stories I've heard, he drove like a wild man. He lived fast and hard, and that is shown by the way he rode. A lot of times they say horses would fall with him in the arena and almost roll over him, which could be really serious. When they got back up, he was on their back fanning them with his hat. You know, he liked to please the crowd, and he was truly a special cowboy.
When I taught out there in the mid-60s, Kyle, out at Fort Pierre, it was interesting. There was an empty building on the west side of Main Street. Let me try to get the year, because you may be able to identify with the year. It was probably 1965. There was this empty building, and one day, as I always drove to work, it was a nice building on the west side of the street of the main drag going right through Fort Pierre, right downtown. And finally, I asked one of the teachers, I said, "What's that empty building for? I never see anything in it." Well, Casey built that for a bar. It was beautiful looking, except he wasn't 21 years old and they wouldn't let him open it. He couldn't be in his own bar. Did you know that?
No, I had never heard that
story.
There's
a new story for you.
Yeah, I certainly believe it too.
I was there for 2 years. The building was never used.
Yeah, I think anybody that ever spent time around Casey, Ivan Danes from Calgary, Canada, can tell a million great stories. He came back, he left the room, he was rooming with Casey. Ivan was real young, and Casey was reaching the end of his career. I think Casey won the world the last time in 1959. But Ivan came back to the motel, or actually it was a hotel, big old lobby, and he walked in, and all of his stuff, his clothes, his saddle, and everything was strung up all around the lobby of the building. You know, Casey had as a practical joke, had drug all his stuff out and hung it up. You know, he wasted a lot of energy just causing trouble for his buddies.
As you can tell, I always enjoy my guests. I've just been lucky. I've just had really some funny guests on, and you have an excellent sense of humor, which you would have had to have had working with Baxter Black. I saw that guy in operation. He just goes up to total strangers and has them in hysterics.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't be good alongside of Baxter unless I was a straight man, because I just can't. He's, as I said before, he's an exceptional talent. In Philip, the night the wagon train left, I think it was on June 5th of 1989, the wagon train was leaving. The night before, I played a single engagement, just my guitar and I did a centennial presentation on the Main Street, and he did one at another place in town. I didn't get to hear his presentation. Of course, Baxter's always good, but I walked into Jay's Saddlery, Western Wear, the next morning, and walked into the saddle repair part of the shop in the back, and Baxter was in there with four other cowboys, and he had his hat on sideways, and he was telling stories and slapping his hip and goofing up his face and really having a ball. And he'd get done with one poem, and he'd say, here's one you'll like, and he'd start in on another one.
One thing I remember, we were doing some ad-libbing out at the airport. We had some time. I'm really glad we had extra time. The plane was right on time, and we were out there early. He got off onto a premise of that he was a CIA agent. Doesn't that sound like it?
Oh, yeah.
And he said, you know, it's the best cover in the world. He says, people think I'm this cowboy humorous, and it's a great cover. Well, what I thought was funny was, as he started to go into the premise, I saw his eyes squint, and that's when he really enjoys his work. I saw him at the show when he did something that he really enjoyed. His eyes start to get all squinty. Have you seen him do that?
Yeah, and what's strange about that, he does it even on the radio, you know. His facial expressions don't change just because there's nobody there to see it.
Tell us about some of the, you've had an opportunity to back up some of the performers in the past, and I'm sure that people will in our audience will be able to identify with them.
Well, we've worked over the years, we've worked with a lot of big timers. We've done shows with you know, Kitty Wells, Johnny Wright, and Bobby Wright, and Don Gibson, and we went out to Gillette, Wyoming, did a country show with Sylvia, and we're called back once to do a Charlie Pride show, but there was a mix-up, and they ended up sending us home. They paid us and sent us home. We didn't get to do the show, which was fine with me. I understand that it was an honest mistake, but
and you got paid.
And we got paid, yeah. And we had another engagement the next night. We were just as soon head out to anyway. But we did get to travel. We did 45 shows at 25 fairs with LaCosta, who's Tanya Tucker's sister, back in 74, and that was enjoyable. She's a fine lady. She and her husband they traveled in a little, I think it was a 57 Volkswagen bus. I was worried about meeting her because we were driving a 68 Chevy bus in 74, or van, and they had a little Volkswagen van they drove, and we kind of outclassed them. But she is a wonderful gal, and she had a song that I think was got to number 4 on the charts, and another one that was number 13 while we were with her.
Looking at your new cassette that's on the market, and by the way, if the people somehow don't see it in their favorite music store or something, why don't you just take the time right now, if they wanted to pick up one of these cassettes that you've done over the years, why don't you give them an address that they could write to and tell them roughly what it costs to put a check in?
All right, they're $10 even. We know I take care of the handling and the postage for mailing them back. But they can just send $10 to.
So let's have them get a pencil and paper right now. Get that paper out. Okay.
Okay, and they can send $10 to. Better yet, they can write for a brochure. I can send them a brochure. Or if they know which tape they would like, if they want the newest one or whatever, we've got 11 tapes available now. They can send $10 to Company Cowboy Songs, Box 228, Wessington Springs, South Dakota, zip 57382.
Let's talk about another of your originals, Rest of My Life, by Kyle Evans. What inspired you for this one?
Well, this is just I wrote this. It's not really a cowboy song. It's a broken love song, I guess. And just the music I was hearing on the radio at the time inspired it. I wrote this song back in about 1972, and I never did record it. And this last trip, my youngest boy went along south with me. He's also a good musician. Dustin is his name. He went along to Nashville with me, and I decided to take this song along and record it just because I had never recorded it. It's called The Rest of My Life, and he does the backup vocals on it.
I heard her with two hands, now wringing wet with sweat from nervous turmoil. I tortured her with cruel and thoughtless injury to body, mind, and soul. Bit by bit, I took a loving woman and destroyed the precious part of her, knowing as I hurt her that someday I'd have to stand and pay the toll. Now I'd give the rest of my life for just one more chance to try to make it right with her.
I should have been to give her all the love I have to give. I can't live with what's left of me when I'm living in a world of what might have been. I'd give the rest of my life for just one more chance. Self-centered, I was living in a wild and hopeless kind of way. Wanting more and giving less with each and every day that passed me by. Carelessly, I threw away a kind of love I know I'll never find again. Now I'm haunted by the memories of the nights I left her home alone to cry. And I'd give the rest of my life for just one more chance to try to make it right with her. To be the way I should have been, to give her all the love I have to give. I can't live with what's left of me when I'm living in a world of what might have been. I'd give the rest of my life for just one more chance to live. I'd give the rest of my life for just one more chance to live.
The music of Kyle Evans and his band with Rest of My Life. That was written by you, right, Kyle?
Right.
Well, thanks, Kyle, for being with us on our anniversary show, starting our third year broadcasting from the heart of South Dakota. We'll be right back. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. This is Chuck Anderson. We're at the Huron Arena today. Kyle Evans is with me on our birthday show. And, Kyle, you want to welcome our listeners from Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska?
You bet. I'd like to welcome you all to the KOKK and Chuck Anderson's...
On his birthday show.
On his birthday show.
Yeah.
Anniversary show.
Anniversary show. We're starting our third year. Kyle Evans, if you haven't been with us for the rest of the earlier part of the hour, Kyle is from West Union Springs, South Dakota. Kyle has been a recording artist. He's a songwriter, a stage personality, worked with some of the greats, backed up Kitty Wells. Now, that is a big name. And I've just, when you said Kitty Wells, I was a good host. I didn't want to interrupt, but I says, wow, what was it like working with Kitty Wells?
Well, that was it. It was a one-night deal, actually. We had her in Westington Springs. I was a JC member at the time.
Wow.
And we played on the... We didn't actually back her up. She brought her own band, but we were on the show with her. We did the first part of the show. And
you were the warm-up.
Yeah, we... some people say that we would say that we opened for her, but like, like Williams and Ree say, she closed for us.
Have you ever had a chance to meet those guys?
Oh, yeah, we've worked with them a bunch.
I've never met them. I think they're funny, and I've seen them on television. What are they like? Are they just as crazy in real life as they are, or is that kind of a routine that they use just for television?
Well, I'll tell you, they just about every time I've been around them, whether they're performing or not, they're cut-ups. They walk the fairgrounds here in Huron, and my boy used to kind of follow them around. He got to know them a few years ago, and they always had a cute remark for him. They have their I don't know how to say this, they're fantastic performers, and they anytime they're in the public eye, they're on fire. You know, they're like Baxter. But I'm sure I walked into a dressing room in Rapid City following a performance once and talked seriously with them, you know, and they weren't 100% goof offs, you know. They but they've got up on stage at the after the rodeos, at the rodeo dances, they'll come over and put the guitars on and do a whole set. I'll get down, sit and laugh at them. And they can get up and they can sing country music, new and old. They can go back. They know a lot of songs. They're not just comedians. They're fantastic musicians.
How far away have you played? How far away from Wessington Springs, South Dakota, have you gone and represented the state?
I guess probably the farthest would be Las Vegas. Three times we've played the Miss Rodeo America pageant out there.
Hey.
We've played at Louisville, the North American International Livestock Expo in Louisville. We've played 11 years in a row. That's a rodeo that has really come on. It's the stock show itself has grown a lot, and the rodeo has become a fantastic rodeo. That's done at Freedom Hall, which seats 20,000 for a basketball game. It seats 16,000 for a rodeo. Huh. And the last couple of years, they've been filling it on Saturday night. So the people in Louisville are starting to come around to rodeo. And it's always fun when you've got a big crowd.
Vegas, it makes no difference where you're performing in Vegas. Just the name has magic, because the greatest entertainment in the world has played Las Vegas. The first time that you were going down there, did you fly down or did you drive?
I always had to drive and pull the equipment. The rest of the band, they and their wives jump on a plane and fly out.
Did you come in at night by any chance?
No, I've come in the daytime both.
You miss that awesome sight of when you come over that mountain and just the whole valley lights up like a giant spotlight.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If there are any clouds in the sky, they're lit up too.
Yeah.
You know.
As you were coming over the mountain and you look down in the valley and there's Las Vegas and Kyle Evans is going to be performing down there. This is reality now, Kyle. I mean, you're looking at that city. What was going through your mind? I just love to kind of get into a guy's mind, because I know a lot of times I have an adrenaline rush that you just can't believe.
Yeah, it is kind of mind-boggling. You almost have to not think about it to get along. The first couple of Queen's pageants were held at the UNLV, at the Rodeo Center, where they hold the national finals. And for years I've been singing the Auctioneer song, Leroy Van Dyke tune.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
So we get out there. In fact, I've recorded it three times on three different albums. But we got out there to do the Queen's pageant, and here we are, the band, and Leroy's the MC.
Oh, wow!
And I thought this is a little mixed up. Of course, I probably couldn't do the job as an MC.
That's Leroy Van Dyke.
Yeah, Leroy Van Dyke. He's a great country entertainer, you know.
Yes.
And I thought, here we are playing, and he's up on stage doing
his song.
Yeah, and we did his song too. But I was at the National Western in Denver. We did all 22 performances of the rodeo in 1983, and at noon we'd go over and play the National Western Club. And one day I was right in the middle of the Auctioneer song, and Leroy walked in, and it's one of those times when I didn't know if
I'm getting nervous for you.
Yeah, I didn't know if I should quit or finish it. We went ahead and finished it, and afterwards he came right to the stage and said, "I enjoyed that," but he said, "You don't do it right." He said, "You do the words different than I do," and I said, "I know, I kind of learned it my own way." He said, "Come out to the Holiday Inn North, we're playing out there tonight." He said, "I'll get you the words." So we drove out that night and we visited. He and Penny DeHaven were working the Holiday Inn North. He sent one of his band members out to the bus, and he came back in with the sheet music. I said, "Sign it for me, will you?" And he did. I still do the Auctioneer song the way I always did, but at least we've got the sheet music for it.
My wife and I one time were driving through to California. We spent a Saturday or Sunday night in Las Vegas for one reason. He was playing the Landmark Hotel Resort, and I hoped so much that he would do the Auctioneer song, and he did, and the crowd just roared.
Yeah, it is a good song. We've done it since before I ever dreamt of singing for a living. I lived in Seattle for a year and a half. That's that year and a half that I was missing a while ago.
Yes.
I lived out there and worked for Boeing, and I took a guitar along with me, and I used to sit and sing that song at night when I was feeling a little lonesome or something. I'd sing it and a lot of others.
Kyle, I like it so well. Now, I don't want to embarrass you, but Man,
oh,
would
sure.
I...
sure you don't.
Hey, can you do a few measures? Now, there's only like 3,000 people here at the Huron Arena, so there won't be like, you know, you're doing it cold. No instrument, no nothing. Could you do a few?
Well, can we I can turn my back on these 3,000 people.
Okay.
I don't think there are quite that many here. I'll do a little bit of it. Able on our heights, so again, I'm out of welcome, boys. Here we come out a lot, 29, what are you going to bid for? 25 dollar bid, dollar 30 dollar 35, who'd bid a $40 45 bid a dollar, who'd bid a $50 $55 bill?
Oh, fantastic! Thanks, Kyle, ever so much. Now I have to save a little bit of time on this segment because we're going to have one of your longer arrangements that are coming up, and maybe you could tell me what we're going to be listening to.
All right, this song is called "The Hustler." It's a song that I wrote about a Nebraska cowboy that I never had the privilege of meeting. He's got a son that I've known well. He's a three-decade rodeo cowboy. And his father is who the song is written about. His name was Vern Whitaker. He was both a timed event and a rough stock cowboy. He used to travel in a straight truck with six kids and his wife. He took the family along. He could haul three horses in the back and put the milk cow crossways behind them so she didn't dry up while they were gone, and they had warm milk at the campfires. He was known by every great Nebraska cowboy. He was killed in the arena about 5 years ago, helping some young kids steer wrestle. Now, when he was 74 years old, he went to Hyannis, Nebraska, and rode a saddle bronc horse. And his goal was to, and he made the ride. His goal was to ride a saddle bronc horse when he was 80. He didn't make that because of this accident in the arena, which wasn't his fault. Dog and horse went to the other end of the arena and didn't stay. It came back for an open gate. He rode in front of it and it never slowed down. Hit him full speed and he died 5 minutes later. But I'd heard so many songs about the way he dressed and the talent that this cowboy had that I wrote a thing from the standpoint of a cocky young cowboy out to whip the world. It's called "The Hustler."
I was decked out in my Wranglers and my best cowboy shirt, wearing Justin's and a Bailey shaped just right. I was mounted to the hill on the best calf horse I owned. He was quick and seasoned, really tuned up tight. Not a big money roping, just a jackpot among friends, though they took all comers, most of them I knew. I was checking out the cattle on the backside of the pen when I saw the strangest sight come into view. Was an old battered truck built some 30 years ago. It rattled as it pulled into the gate. The old sideboards were banging as the dust rolled out behind. They were driving like they thought they would be late. There were five kids in the cab, riding in the middle, with mom and dad sitting by the doors. I thought this kind of funny, but it really tickled me when I saw the kid back riding with the horse. While the stranger got his horse out, the wife and kids unloaded and sat together quietly on the ground. Then the cowboy saddled up and quickly hung his rope, and I watched him as he slowly rode around. His shirt and jeans were dirty and they'd seen their better days. His hat was rolled and greasy on the brim. On his feet were leather work shoes, the kind a farmer wears. They were tied with twine and wearing mighty thin. His horse reminded me of horses that I'd seen at an auction headed for their final ride. A tall, big-headed thoroughbred, all scarred up on the nose, with ribs a-showing clearly through his hide. His feet were big as pancakes and nearly just as flat. I noticed that he's real cow hocked behind. And anyone who'd rope on him, I'm thinking to myself, is either green or had to lost his mind. I walked up to the lady who's taking entry fees, and I pulled a roll of 20s from my shirt. As I handed her the cash, I heard a cowboy saying, I just hope this greenhorn stranger don't get hurt. Well, the roping started right on time, 16 of us entered. The score was long, the calves were running fools. The cowboy's turning in the times down in the lower teens. The stranger's watching, staying mighty cool. My cinch is pulled, I'm powdered up, my string's between my teeth, and I ride into the box cause it's my turn. If these cowboys think a 13 flat is good enough to win, then these cowboys got an awful lot to learn. I'm nodding, riding, roping, though we use a little ground. I don't mind runners if they're running true.
I plank him quick and tie him tight and mount back up again. The judge says good, the timer says spin two. Now I'm knowing that I've got it won and I'm feeling mighty good, though I'm trying hard not to let it show. The only thing between me and a pocket full of cash is the stranger, and he's the last to go. As he slowly rides into the pen, I'm thinking what a sight. And all at once a change is taking place. The horse that looked so down and out has lit himself on fire, and the stranger's got a smile upon his face. He rides into the roping box and turns his mount around. The horse backs to the corner on his own. The smile is gone, there's sheer determination on his face, the likes of which I guess I've never known. He nods his head and holds his horse and never makes a move till the calf's completely cleared out of the gate. A move that's really pleasing me as I watch from the fence, because I know this cowboy's coming way too late. But I've never seen a calf horse fire the way that pony fired, running low, his belly on the deck. They're really closing up the gap when the stranger takes his shot, and from 15 feet he ropes him round the neck. The horse sets low and sends him like a shotgun to the calf. He planks and ties him up like a machine. He rides from the arena as the timer yells 9 flat, and I'm trying to believe what I've just seen. With my paycheck in his pocket, he puts his horse away while I'm still sitting stunned upon the fence. He quietly loads his family and leaves without a word, and no one around here has seen him since. Well, I don't know much about him, and I probably never will. I just know at hustling calves he's number one. So if you ever run into him and decide to take him on, then friend, you'd better rope him just for fun. So if you ever run into him and decide to take him on, then friend, you'd better rope him just for fun.
It's been our pleasure to have you with us today, Kyle. You are listening to Kyle Evans and his band doing one of his own arrangements titled The Hustler, and another one written by the man himself. Kyle lives in Wessington Springs, South Dakota, and thanks all you people out there for listening to us. We also have our other listeners, and thanks again for sharing the morning with us. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Personalities with Chuck Anderson. We're back. It's Chuck Anderson. The artist that we've been playing has been Kyle Evans. It's wonderful music, Kyle. I hope that people now recognize the style of music that you do. Some of this as you've written that we've had on the show today. The last one was wonderful. And before we lose out on our time, we're going to do one called Echo Rag. And you have a wonderful story on it. Can we just mention a little brief part of it, why it's important and why we're going to put it on the show? We'll let you talk more about it in a little bit.
Well, the Elko Rag was written by Bill Wood. He's a cowboy poet from western South Dakota. He goes to Elko to the cowboy poetry gathering each year. He wrote the Elko Rag a couple of years ago, and he talked to me about recording it. I went ahead and recorded it on this album, and he took it to him, or took it along with him to the cowboy poetry gathering this year in Elko. They were in the process of doing a 2-hour documentary, a television show on the cowboy poetry gathering. And I got a call last week from an attorney in California. They said this is going to be the theme song for the TV show. Huh. So they called to get permission to use it.
That's exciting. A South Dakotan that's going to be on the show. I'm always impressed. When, you know, sometimes we forget that Cheryl Ladd's from here. We have a lot of people from South Dakota that have gone out and done very well for themselves. And I'm probably the first guy that's the proudest person in the world. It's kind of like, hey, that really looks good for South Dakota. When you're out on the road, anybody ever stare at those South Dakota plates? They do me, because they've never seen a guy from South Dakota.
Well, yeah. You know, I had a musician in Nashville, on a serious note. He turned to me one night and he said, "What in the heck do you see in South Dakota?" And I sat there and I looked at him and I said, "I can't tell you that in 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And I said, if you drive through South Dakota, being from a populated area, that's what you're used to, you drive through and you may not like South Dakota just in a drive through. But I said, if you stayed there for 6 months, you'd never leave." South Dakota's got so much. It's got everything we need, and a lot of those things that we don't need are other places.
We're so proud. We think during the 90s census, now there's a lot of conjecture, we think since we became a state, we aren't a territory anymore, and some people don't realize that, we think we hit 700,000, and that's awesome. A lot of cities all over the country are bigger than that.
Yeah, that's true. And along with population, high population, comes a lot of things that...
High crime
and a lot of headaches that we don't have out here in South Dakota.
Have you ever been mugged or anything in all the trips that you made? Anything stolen, broken into?
No, I haven't. And the first...
Probably that scary cowboy hat that you got on. Nobody'd want to mess with you.
Oh, I don't think that scares too many people. But, you know, the first 10 years we played, I had $5,000, $6,000 worth of equipment in the trailer, and I never had a lock on it. You know, I know that's not a smart thing to do, but because you're inviting trouble. But that's the way South Dakota is, and that's the way I like it, you know.
Tell us how you got into music, Kyle.
Well, my dad strummed a guitar all the while I was growing up. In fact, the other day, last week, my dad said, you know, tonight, 50 years ago, I was playing a dance up in Ketchikan, Alaska. We've got the old guitar he was playing the dance on. He bought it for $6, I think, and it took him, no, he bought it for $25, and he planned on playing four dances to pay it off. He borrowed the money, but he was in the military at the time. He ended up paying it off in three because they passed the hat one night and got a little extra money. But he was playing for like $6 a night or something like that. But my mother also was musical, and we grew up singing in the choir in church. And, you know, a lot of country music, country musicians started in singing gospel or singing in church, and I'm no different. That's my childhood. We grew up a little country church, and I think of the old lady that was... The choir leader at that time, and she had a lot to do with my music. But that's how it started. I grew up with it. I was singing harmony when I was real young, and I've always liked music. I kind of fell into it by accident, but here we are 25 and a half years later.
Anybody over in Wessington Springs you want to say hello to before we get into our last song for today? And which is... We're almost running out of time, too. Any family over there? We forgot to mention how many children you have. So why don't you give the ages and where they're at and say hi to somebody over there at Wessington Springs.
All right. My wife, Linda, is at Wessington Springs. We've been married just about 25 years, and I've got two boys, one 23 and one 21. Kurt is the oldest, and Dustin is the youngest. Both of those have played in the band. My folks, of course, Kenneth and Gladys, and I guess the whole town of Wessington Springs has pretty well stuck behind me over the years, as has all of South Dakota. I'm so pleased to still be here. You know, people say, why don't you go south, or why don't you go big time or something? And I'm right where I want to be.
Did you ever have a chance, Kyle, to meet the late Governor George Mickelson?
Oh, yeah. In 1989, I spent quite a bit of time around Governor Mickelson. He was a great fellow. He could put a cowboy hat on, and that big frame of man looked like a cowboy. First time I saw him with the hat on and the Wranglers and the boots was down in Elk Point. He come driving a team of horses all alone up in the front of the wagon, and I thought, boy, there's a big, good-looking cowboy, and then I realized it was the governor. I was shocked, to say the least. It was one of those times like when I remember right where I was when I heard President Kennedy had been assassinated, and a year ago, I remember that I could walk to the chair I was sitting in when a waitress came over and said she just heard the governor's plane went down. And I was working, I was performing at a deal, and I told the people there what she had told me, and my ears were ringing all night long. I couldn't believe it. He was a great man, a great friend.
I'll just take a few seconds. You stumbled on something on April 22nd. It'll be a year. And I thought, how appropriate. I go back in my files. A couple of years ago, you may remember when they had the Hubert H. Humphrey Highway dedication, and that's going to be Highway 37 north and south. That goes to Dolan, where Hubert grew up and then moved to Huron. And we think an awful lot of Hubert Humphrey. George McGovern was one of his friends. Yeah, was one of his friends. We had some Democrats there. We had Republicans. It was kind of funny because Daschle was saying good things. But the governor, George Mikkelsen, was there and had some wonderful words to say about this Democrat, Hubert H. Humphrey. I recorded the entire, I had a little interview with him, used the interview on the show, but I also recorded his speech. And I believe I may have the only recording, because there were no news reporters there whatsoever. Happened during the state fair, everybody was busy, and I was thinking it might be very appropriate to get that tape out, and if no one's ever heard it, it'd be a nice thing to do. Kyle, introduce our last song that you will be performing for us on today's show.
All right, this is a song we mentioned a little earlier that's going to end up, I believe, the title song for this upcoming documentary on that cowboy poetry gathering in Elko, and it's called The Elko Rag.
We're gonna pack up our bags and we'll turn out all our nags, 'cause we just got us some news. There's a place we would go where we'd fight rain, sleet, or snow, just to get away from all our blues. Every cowboy starts lathering when he hears about the gathering, 'cause he knows that cowboy sounds. We'll be having a time when we start spinning our rhymes, and we all are Elko bound. Face wears a grin, they're hands from all parts of the West. Neat Nevada's blue skies, where this cowboy's heart lies, for a time we love the best. Where the night turns to day, and we're carried away to a world where friends abound. We will live the sublime as we share line after line, and we all are Elko bound. And we're too tired to eat when the time is winding down. We'll saddle up once again and bid farewell to old friends, then head for our home ground. To that cabin or shack with the barn out in back, or any place that we are found, where memories that we share will cut the chill from the air till we all are Elko bound. Where the feeling lives on after the gathering's gone, till we all are Elko bound.
Kyle Evans in the band with Elko Rag. Kyle, thanks ever so much for being with us today. Ladies and gentlemen, Kyle Evans. We had a lot of fun broadcasting from the Huron Arena today for our anniversary show, now on our third year. It was nice having you with us today, and I mean that. I wonder where you're at. Driving? Boating? Maybe just out in the garage doing a little work? Well, it's been fun, and thanks for letting us be part of your day. Broadcasting to you from here in South Dakota, this is Chuck Anderson saying, have a safe and pleasant week.